First you told Solomon that you could ween no god, and if we dared to question, then he wouldn't spare the rod. For you we worked the soil, for you we dug the moors, for you we shed our blood, fought so many pointless wars. And now you build your fences and you say there's nothing we can do. Say the world around us belongs fairly to the few, but about 6 billion people no doubt will agree this world is our home, not your property. It's the commons, our right of birth. And you would enclose the land all around the earth. Our future is your downfall when we cut this ball and chain. You'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. With our sweat we built the railroads, built cities on these shores.
Good afternoon and welcome to Corporations and Democracy for February 8th, 2019. This is the program that examines how corporations dominate our democracy and what citizens are doing to replace corporate dominance with true democracy. I'm Steve Scalmanini with co-host Annie Esposito. Today we want to highlight the 2018 annual Are You Serious Awards given by independent journalist Con Hallinan to individuals, companies, and governments that make reading the news a daily adventure of boondoggles, including unaccountability for waste in the Pentagon. Con M. Hallinan is an independent journalist and a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus. That's a think tank without walls. He holds a PhD in anthropology from the University of California, Berkeley, and oversaw the journalism program at the University of California at Santa Cruz for 23 years, where he was awarded the UCSC Alumni Association's Distinguished Teaching Award, as well as the university's Innovations in Teaching Award and Distinguished Teaching Award, as well as the university's Excellence in Teaching Award. He was also a college provost at UC Santa Cruz and was awarded a Real News Award from Project Censored. Retired since 2004, he lives in Berkeley. So let's see what he has discovered about boondoggles in 2018, including waste and unaccountability at the Pentagon and far beyond. Con Hallinan, welcome to Corporations and Democracy.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Hi, Annie.
Hey, glad to have you. I know it must be a challenge with all the craziness in every single day's news to pick out the ones that are the most stupefying, but you have found some that are, they still take your breath away, even as jaded as we are. So this is a whole series of awards that you did for last year for the most, oh gosh, what would you say? Well, we're saying crazy boondoggles. What is the most breathtaking?
Well, there are a couple of them. I know that this program focuses on sort of corporate malfeasance and that kind of thing. So I think we could probably start there. You can never go wrong by looking at U.S. military spending and the Pentagon. The one of the awards I give is the Golden Sprocket, and this takes a little bit of explanation. The U.S. has a very fancy, very expensive fighter plane called the F-22, the Raptor. And it's a stealth thing, and it's supposed to be the most high-performing fighter plane in the world, and it sort of sweeps the enemy out of the sky, except that this past fall, when Hurricane Michael came to Florida, it totally trashed 17 of these F-22s. Now, these are $339 million apiece. And so the question people ask is, well, wait a minute, everybody knew Hurricane Michael was coming. Why didn't they fly the airplanes to, Kansas City or, wherever, out of harm's way? Well, because the F-22 doesn't work very well, and more than 50% of the F-22s are always in the shop or on the ground unable to fly because they're so delicate that they can't keep them in the air. So they had these 17, they flew out some of them, and they had these 17 that they couldn't fly, and so the hurricane came through and just totally trashed them. That cost taxpayers $5 billion, which is, I think, what President Trump is asking for his border war. The other thing that I think is an amazing figure is there's never been an audit of the Pentagon. It's never happened. So they finally got an audit of the Pentagon, and they have misplaced $21 trillion. They cannot account for $21 trillion. Now, if you think about that figure, $21 trillion is just a staggering amount of money. And it also represents more than 20 years of military spending. Our military budget is officially $716 billion, but actually it's much bigger than that because they don't count things that you would think of as military spending as part of the military budget. Nuclear weapons, for instance, are not in the military budget. They're in the energy budget. Things like retirement, all of that kind of stuff, those are not in the military budget, and neither is the cost of fighting wars, because we generally do that on credit. So, in any case, they cannot account for $21 trillion. Now, if you figure this, that university and college students are currently $1.5 trillion in debt. That's the second largest debt after mortgages in the United States, and college and university students are the single most indebted cohort in the population. So for the cost of basically 1.5 years of military spending, you could totally get rid of that $1.5 trillion. Those are the kinds of things that you see a lot in military spending because there's really no oversight. So corporations like Lockheed Martin and Boeing and Raytheon and everything like that, just nobody's looking over their shoulders, and they just spend money like it's going out of style. And of course, taxpayers pay for this and then get told, by the way, that there's no money. So
interesting, isn't it? And yeah, and it could do so much to heal the ills that we have right now.
Of course.
The one thing that I think is sort of fascinating is this isn't reported just by, you know, the left-wing press. This was in Forbes magazine and vetted by, you know, an economist professor at Michigan State University. So this is really, even though it was hard to find because it's listed in all this missing money as some sort of adjustment rhetoric is the thing.
Yes, adjustment. Could I adjust my checkbook?
Yeah.
$21 trillion in it. I'd like to do that.
No, they're spending like they have no oversight, and gosh, they have no oversight.
They have no oversight. And the thing is that it's also very concentrated. Now, there's only a couple of big corporations that make weapons and associated. I mean, Lockheed Martin is the largest arms manufacturer in the world, and Boeing and Raytheon are right up there. So what you've got is you only got two or three companies, really, that make these weapon systems and their support systems and things. And so, in a sense, you don't have a choice. You have to go to them, and they will come in on the agreement, you know, that they can charge whatever they want to charge. And the things don't have to work. The F-35, which is the other big super fighter bomber that we are currently deploying and which some of our unfortunate allies are buying without realizing what they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a weapon system that costs $1.5 trillion. It's the single most expensive weapon system in U.S. history, and it doesn't work. When I say it doesn't work, I mean it really doesn't work. And the Marines did a test with it against other fighter planes, older fighter planes, F-16s, F-15s.
Ones that we know do work.
And they found that the only way the F-35 could survive an engagement with other airplanes was that if it ran. So,
like ran away, you mean?
$5 billion on an airplane that can't fight.
This is the finest fighting force in the world here. And
absolutely. So. Oh, the other thing about it was small pilots had a 95% 1% chance of being decapitated if they ejected from the airplane. So those are not really good odds. If you're a small pilot, go down with your plane.
Nothing much good about this. Well, congratulations to Lockheed Martin for their golden sprocket wrench.
I feel they really earned it.
And all their, you call them hangar queens, the high-tech planes that can never leave the hangar. Okay. So we have quite a list here. Continuing on, here's something that the U.S. has proudly taken a stand against, and that is breastfeeding.
Oh, boy. This is just an awful story. It really is an awful story. The United Nations World Health Assembly held a gathering, and a big part of it was to encourage breastfeeding over the use of infant formula. Now, there are real reasons why this is the case. Human milk contains a lot of the antibodies that infants need to fight off infections and things like that. And a Lancet study found that universal breastfeeding would prevent 800,000 infant deaths a year. It would reduce ear infections by 50%, gastrointestinal diseases by 64%, diabetes, two kinds of leukemia, infant death syndrome, asthma, etc. And this is particularly the case in poorer areas where you don't have secure water supplies, where your water supplies may be contaminated with bacteria or protozoans or human feces or whatever. You mix that with the infant formula, you give it to the kids, and the kids are in deep trouble. So this wasn't considered to be a big, you know, issue kind of thing, and Ecuador was going to introduce the resolution. But the Trump administration is supporting the American and European companies that make infant formula. It's a $70 billion a year industry. And the U.S. told Ecuador that if they introduced the resolution, that the U.S. was going to put up trade barriers against all Ecuadorian goods and was going to cut all aid to Ecuador. And they did the same thing all over Latin America. And these countries backed up. They removed their names from the resolution, and they wouldn't introduce it. Finally, the Russians introduced it, and it passed. But even so, the U.S. managed to get one little change in it, and it's a serious change. The original resolution said that the World Health Organization needed to challenge, quote, inappropriate promotion of foods for infants and young children, unquote. And the U.S. got that line taken out, and then they would vote for it. So this was a case in which greed is killing kids. I mean, here was the president talking about, he was so concerned about late abortions, you know, and they were going to stop late abortions, and we have to, you know, these infants, you know, we don't want them to suffer and everything. But it's okay if 800,000 of them die because the U.S. is pushing infant formula on their mothers. That was a hard one to write because, you know, kids dying is just really not a good thing. But it doesn't bother the Trump administration.
You know, public health is an easy target for, you know,
but yeah, and it has been all along, and it's going right now. In fact, one of the things I found interesting is that during the State of the Union, he said, we're going to abolish HIV. I'm going to get rid of HIV.
Mm-hmm.
They have cut every single program for HIV. Everyone. They had a panel that they dismissed the whole panel without a word. They've moved HIV funds to fight HIV out of HIV and used them for other things. They, right down the line, they've cut every single program at all. I mean, you know, I don't know. I kind of hope, you know, when that happens, a giant lightning bolt comes through and, you know, strikes down the speaker. But, you know, he just got away with saying that, and as if he's really going to do something about AIDS. They're not going to do anything about AIDS at all.
Yeah, he seems to be pretty aware that he can say anything, and nobody's going to really challenge him on it, except, well, you are, but Fox News, I guess, won't, and that's where most people hang out is on Fox News. And you're talking about inappropriate food or inappropriate promotion of food, little did I know that pepper spray is a good, a yummy consumable.
Absolutely. It's good on nachos. Ron Colburn, who's the president of the U.S. Border Patrol Foundation, he was on Fox News, and so they had this picture of that. I don't know if you saw it. There was a terrible picture of them tear gassing these women and little toddlers, little kids, infants, and everything. They were tear gassing them, and you know, people were running from this. And so the Trump administration came under fire, and the Border Patrol people came under fire for this. And this guy goes on Fox News and he says, "Look," he says, "first of all, pepper spray is a natural." Is a natural product. What he means by that, it's a manufactured product. I don't know if you've ever been pepper sprayed before.
Oh, yes.
I have been pepper sprayed on a number of occasions. The stuff that they sprayed on me, I would not put on my nachos. I would try not to put anywhere, have it anywhere near me. And the problem with pepper spray is that it tends to linger. And so if you get it on your clothes and you get out of the area where there's pepper spray, you'll still continue to experience this burning in your nose and in your mouth and in your eyes, because the pepper spray sort of hangs on to you. You really have to take off your clothes and change your clothes and things like that, and shower's not a bad idea. So this guy gets on there, and he says it's perfectly, it's a natural product, and you can, and this is his quote, "you could actually put it on your nachos and eat it," unquote. I wish I could see this guy on Fox News eat nachos with pepper spray on it. That would really make my day.
Well, I guess the thing here is that he didn't put it on his eyeball, that's for sure.
Well, I'll tell you, if you swallowed that stuff, you would be in trouble.
Let me mention to listeners that we're talking with Colin Hallinan today on Corporations and Democracy, and we're talking about his awards given for the year 2018, the Are You Serious Awards, and including some boondoggles in the Daily News, and including mention of some significant unaccountability for waste in the Pentagon.
And so congratulations to Ron Colburn for the Golden Cuisine Award. This already sounds like some Marie Antoinette stuff going on, but you found a lot more and some special items that you've separated out for the Marie Antoinette Award. Two winners this year. Tell us about that.
Well, one of them is Nikki Haley, who was ambassador to the United Nations, and she just stepped down. Ambassador to the United Nations, and what she got in a snit about was that Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont supported a United Nations study of poverty in the United States. The United Nations has been going around and looking at poverty in industrial countries. They did a damning study of poverty in Great Britain. And they looked at poverty in the United States, and they found that tens of millions of Americans suffer massive levels of deprivation, is the term that they use. And so Sanders endorsed it. So Nikki Haley gets up to the UN and denounces Sanders and says it's absolutely patently ridiculous, is her term, for the United Nations to look at poverty in the United States, because the United States is, quote, the wealthiest and the freest country in the world. That is, it is. Some 40 million people still live in poverty. More than 30 million people have no health insurance. Over half of older workers have no retirement savings. 140 million Americans are struggling to pay basic living expenses. And 40% of Americans couldn't afford a $400 emergency. Couldn't afford $400 in an emergency. Let alone the thing I talked to you about with school children, you know, the university and college students being $1.5 trillion in debt. So that was just, you know, it's that clueless sort of thing, you know, America is great. I would have to add to that, actually, one that's not in this, and that Wilbur Ross, who's the Commerce Secretary, during the shutdown, somebody asked him, well, what about the fact that people are having to go to food banks in order to in order to get by the shutdown. And his comment was he didn't understand that at all. They could just go to the bank and borrow money.
They can
eat cake. They don't have to eat bread.
They could ask Dad for a loan.
The other one I gave was Steve Mnuchin, who's the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury. And somebody asked him at a press conference about the Davos, Switzerland, World Economic Forum. And somebody said, well, you know, do you feel comfortable, given, you know, the certain problems in the United States and around the world in terms of poverty and everything like that, you know, to sort of hang out with the elite? And he gave this blank look, and he said, I didn't realize it was the global elite who was at the Economic Forum. Now, in order to be in the forum, your basic cost is $70,000 just to be in the forum. And that doesn't have anything to do with how you get there or where you stay there and all of that kind of stuff. It's this kind of clueless. You know, we've got Trump has a cabinet which has more billionaires than ever in the history of the country. And it's true. I mean, these people live behind walls and gated communities. They have absolutely no idea about what goes on outside of those walls. And these are the people that are, you know, that are running the country. And in the case of Steven Mnuchin, he wanted to have the United States taxpayers fly him and his wife so they could they got married someplace. At taxpayers' expense, he wanted to fly him and his wife and this whole party of people to the place that they got married and put it on taxpayers' money. Now, this guy's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, that's the other thing about this. The people who have money, you know, they didn't get that money by accident. They got that money by ripping somebody off and being incredibly greedy. And that's what you got. So there's a lot of Marie Antoinette awards out there.
Yeah, we could really see it during the shutdown. As you said, clueless. They just could not relate to what it must be like for ordinary people to go without a paycheck. You know, it's sort of like, oh, you know, so what? You know,
it was pretty
amazing. Okay, so continuing on here, this is getting better and better. Immigration pressures in Europe have ignited a lurch to the right, and I was sort of horrified to say that this even happened in places that we point to, like Denmark, where things are supposed to be very fair. And I'm not familiar with this this Bible reference, Matthew 19:14. We have the golden Matthew 19:14.
That's the line that says, "Suffer the little children."
Oh, yeah, we've seen a little bit of that on these other awards, too.
Oh, a lot of them. And, you know, you're right about this reaction to immigration in Europe. And there's some irony in this because members of the European Union have extremely low birth rates. In other words, in an industrial society, you're supposed to have a birth replacement rate of 2.1. No country in the EU has that. Many of the countries that have the most right wing reactions against immigration are countries with extremely low birth rates. And sometime in the next 30 to 40 years, those countries are going to be in very serious problems, unless they bring immigrants into their country. We're about 1.84. We're going to have trouble, too. And the problem is that without immigration, what you have is you have the working population get smaller and smaller. But because of health care and all that kind of stuff, the older population gets bigger and bigger and lives longer. And eventually what happens is that you can't support the healthcare, infrastructure, transportation, housing, you know, essentially all of the kind of social services that people have. You can't support them without an adequate working population. So the irony is here a lot of these countries are fighting against immigration. If they succeed, they are doomed. The Berlin Institute found that Germany needs 500,000 immigrants a year for the next 30 years, or its infrastructure and social network will collapse. So that's why this award I was given to Danish Prime Minister Lars Rasmussen. And what's happened is that the current government in Denmark has a coalition with a party called the People's Party, which is a neo-fascist party. I mean, it doesn't make any bones about it. And so what they've done is they have designated 25 ghetto areas, and that's their term. They use the term ghetto. 25 ghetto areas in which Muslim immigrants are crowded into. And in those particular areas, families living in ghettos must send their children, starting age one, to school for 25 hours a week to be taught about Christmas and Easter and the Danish language, which is fine. And if you fail to do that, they'll cut your welfare off. And there was one proposal by the People's Party, which has been tabled, but doesn't mean it won't eventually end up that getting out there, is that all children would be forced to wear electronic ankle bracelets and be confined into their homes by 8 p.m. each night. And if they went out, the ankle bracelet would alert the authorities and they could come arrest them and take them off to, I don't know, children's camp, you know, something like that. This is the kind of a meanness that's out there that is really kind of difficult to take. You see it in Italy, you know, with this Northern League, which is part of the ruling coalition in Italy, won't allow immigrants to land in boats, and so they keep these boats out in the ocean for 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, and you know, and there are women and children on these boats, and most of these people are fleeing from wars which we started. I mean, the irony of this is that a large number of the immigrants who are coming in Italy come from Libya. Well, Italy served as the headquarters for the NATO war on Libya that overthrew the Gaddafi government. And now, of course, it's a failed state. And now all those people are trying to get out of the failed state, and Italy is blocking them. So the combination of wars that are going on in Afghanistan, Yemen, Somalia, Iraq, Syria, Libya, some places in Central Africa, all of which, by the way, are wars that are essentially initiated by Western powers. Those are producing refugees, and we're blocking those refugees. And you can add to that climate change, which in the future is going to have a massive impact. Those countries didn't create climate change. We created climate change. The industrial North created climate change. And now we're blocking those people from immigrating. That's 2 billion people sometime in the next 30 years are going to go on the move because they're not going to be able to continue to live in the areas that they live right now. So this particular punitive attitude toward immigration, I mean, it's not only inhuman, it's also stupid. I mean, it will end up, we will end up shooting ourselves in the foot again. You know, people don't see that. People, and not even a lot of progressive forces in Europe have really, you know, they kind of don't want to touch immigration. But the fact is, you have to do it. I mean, you have to say to people in society, look, you have a good life now. 30 years from now, your kids and your grandkids are going to have lesser lives because of the fact that you blocked immigration from coming in and building up a workforce. And that's a hard argument. I mean, it's a difficult argument to make, and people react against it. But the fact of the matter is, you have to do that. People need to understand that the industrial North very profoundly needs a steady flow of immigrants coming into their industries.
Let me take another moment to mention that we're speaking with independent journalist Con Hallinan about his personal awards in 2018. He calls them the Are You Serious Awards. If anyone would like to join the conversation with a question, the number here in the studio is 895-2448. Again, 895-2448. That's in area code 707.
And that immigration situation you were just describing in Europe also applies at our southern border here, where we really need the immigrants, and they're fleeing dire circumstances that were basically created from here.
Absolutely.
With economic policy, yeah.
Particularly when we're talking about the the immigrants from Central America. You know, we supported the overthrow of a democratically elected government in Honduras. We supported that. We lobbied to get Latin American countries to recognize the coup government. A lot of them eventually did. A lot of these immigrants come out of Honduras because Honduras is an incredibly corrupt country run by a dictatorship and with massive economic and political problems. Who's responsible for that? We are. I mean, here's a little piece that just makes me crazy. You have the situation going on in Venezuela right now. So what does the Trump administration do? It appoints Elliot Abrams to oversee the situation in Venezuela. Now, I don't know whether your listeners remember who Elliot Abrams is. I refresh them. He was part of the Reagan administration. He was found guilty for lying to Congress about the Iran-Contra scandal, where the arms were being run to the counter-revolutionaries in Nicaragua who were fighting against the Sandinista government. Elliot Abrams is the guy who was responsible for covering up the El Mazote massacre in 1981, mm-hmm. in which an American-trained military unit called the Alcatel Battalion mm-hmm. went into a village and murdered every single man, woman, and child in the village. And most of them were women and children. They shot them, they bayoneted them, and they decapitated them. Elliot Abrams' job was to prevent that story from getting out. And it took several years for that story to finally get out. This is the guy who we've appointed to run our operation in Venezuela, a guy who, under any normal circumstances, would be in The Hague charged with genocide and war crimes. So, you know, when we start to think about what is this going to mean for Latin America, and we put people like Elliot Abrams back into power, it's just, you know, you could say that it's irony and it's almost, you know, caricature, except of course it's going to result in a lot of people getting killed.
Yeah, that's a really bloody one there. We did have somebody trying to get in, so just do your redial and keep trying, because we're going to certainly finish the thoughts before we pick up the phone, but we're anxious to get your calls, too.
And it's 895-2448.
So this you had the Matthew 1914 award, but there was other things affecting children, too, that caught your attention.
Yeah, the British Home Office, there was a report by the House of Lords about the British Home Office, and apparently what the British Home Office has been doing is that they've been taking kids and turning them into undercover informants about drug dealers and terrorists and criminals. These are little kids. They're turning them into these informants. Now, you know what happens to an informant when they find out that you're an informant? And do you realize that when you're a young kid, you may not really understand what's at stake here? They've been doing this all the way along. And finally, the House of Lords did a study of this and said, you have to stop doing this. What it said was it may expose them, that is the children, it may expose them to increased risk in their mental and physical welfare, which is, you know, the British understatement.
Yeah, no kidding. We have a call, so I'm going to stop you there.
Sure.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to hear your guest's take on cyber currency.
Oh, okay.
Take on
cyber currency? Do you have anything to say about cyber currency? That's not exactly our subject, so.
I don't have a whole lot to say about that.
Okay, well, let's go on then. We were talking about the Suffer the Little Children Awards, and here's another call. Let's try this. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I heard an interesting Freudian slip by the president about a month ago. I don't know what radio station it was on, but he said, with regard to the southern border, he said, we can't have all these immigrants coming into our company, into our country. So, I mean, he's running the whole place like it's a corporation. And I wonder to what degree we should expect the privatization of the entire country and the looting of Fort Knox, which is already well begun.
Okay.
Well, the privatization is certainly a thing. And, you know, I write about foreign policy. It's interesting to if you take a look at the figures for the war in Afghanistan. And you take a look at the number of American soldiers who have been killed. Right next to it is the number of private contractors who have been killed. There are more private contractors in Afghanistan than there are American troops. And that has always been the case, even at the point where you had, 140,000 troops, of which about 100,000 of them were Americans. They have privatized foreign policy. They privatized foreign policy with all of these private contractors. And there even was a proposal, they haven't taken this up yet, there was a proposal to essentially turn the Afghan war over to something like Blackwater, which is this mercenary army. And that privatization is going on pretty much across the board. And, you know, people need to understand that when you privatize something, the only reason why that company is there is because it's making a profit. If it doesn't make a profit, it goes out of business. So how do you make a profit? Well, you make a profit by either overcharging or not delivering what you say you're delivering. And that has certainly been the case of Afghanistan. Billions and tens of billions of dollars has just gone missing in Afghanistan and Iraq as well.
That has a familiar ring to it. Okay, so you had one more honorable mention here after giving out the Matthew 1914 awards. The EPA got recognized here.
Ruth Etzel, who has been the head of Children's Health Protection as part of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for many years, and what she's an expert at is what is the impact of exposing children, particularly to toxins, lead, mercury, pesticides, smog, etc. And kids, of course, are much more sensitive to these things because they're smaller, and so essentially if you ingest lead and you weigh 30 pounds, it's going to have a bigger effect on you than if you weigh 140 pounds. And everyone knows, and particularly in the case of mercury and lead, that this stuff has permanent effects. In other words, lead will lower your IQ. And it doesn't go away, even if you get rid of the lead. It does permanent kind of damage. And she's an expert at this stuff. But, of course, when Trump came in, what he said, first thing he said, getting rid of regulations. I mean, he even said it in the speech, you know, the State of the Union speech about getting rid of regulations. And so what he did was that they took Ruth Etzel and they took away her phone, They took away her desk, and they sent her home. She's being paid, but she's just sitting at home with nothing to do. In the meantime, you know, our kids are getting filled up with mercury and pesticides and lead and getting asthma from smog, et cetera. So that's another, you know, that's another one of those, you know, suffer the little children. There you go. Well, a lot of little kids are going to suffer because of the fact that Ruth Edsel is sitting at home with nothing to do.
Yeah, that's certainly one of the uglier parts of your awards is the effect on the young people and the people coming up. We did give an honor to Lockheed Martin, but you haven't forgotten Raytheon.
No, Raytheon is very good. Yeah, I'm sure that people remember back to in the first Gulf War, where we had these Patriot missiles, and there was a very famous picture of a Patriot missile arcing up and striking an incoming rocket, and sort of cheers around and everything like that. And the Patriots are fake. I mean, it's a complete lemon. Jeffrey Lewis of the Middlebury Institute of International Studies in Monterey did an analysis of the Patriot missile, which is made by Raytheon, although it also has parts from Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin. That's one of the things. All of these companies are kind of intertwined so that Lockheed Martin will make the F-22 and the F-35, but Grumman will also make parts that go into the F-22 and the F-35. So sort of everybody gets at the table. And so he did a very, very thorough examination of every single use of the Patriot, and he concludes that, one, it certainly can't intercept long-range ballistic missile, but he could only find one example of where the Patriot missile actually struck an incoming missile, an old Scud, which are very, very slow and easy to hit. And yet, this thing is selling like hotcakes. Saudi Arabia spent $5.4 billion on the Patriots, Romania, $4 billion, Poland, $4.5 billion, Turkey, $3.5 billion, and the thing doesn't work at all. That's true generally of anti-missile systems. They tend to be enormous boondoggles. I don't know if people recall Star Wars. Well, Trump is restarting up Star Wars. And Star Wars cost about $150 billion, and it couldn't hit the broadside of a barn if you were inside the barn. It's absolute use. It's a huge boondoggle, but it's an enormous amount of money that goes to these corporations and also the military. There's an interesting piece in the London Review of Books about the older Bush, and one of the points that the article makes is that they talk to generals about Star Wars, and all the generals say, "We knew this thing would never work. I mean, we knew that it was a pipe dream, but boy, we got a lot of money."
Yeah,
and they did. So that's bottom line is you get a lot of money. Whether they work or not, it's not important.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if Consumer Reports took your information here and made a whole special edition on
yeah.
the value of our,
exactly.
our Patriot
the
missiles?
F-35, do not buy under any circumstances. Do not eject, you know, if you're a small pilot. I mean,
okay, so now you have what you call the say what, which is like, I guess you can't even believe it as you actually hear it.
That's, you know, that's really it. I mean, when I read these things, that's what I said. I said, what? You know, what is this? Now, there's civil war going on in Yemen. It's a terrible war. I mean, it's really an awful war. Yemen is the poorest country in the Arab world. The war has killed about 10,000 people, most of them civilians. It's largely an air war fought by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. And it has it's not only killed a lot of people, it has also the possibility of famine could affect 10 million people in this country. It's just awful. And it couldn't take place. couldn't be if it wasn't for the United States. We supply the Saudis and the United Arab Emirates with their airplanes, with their bombs, with their targeting, with in-air fueling. Our Navy helps blockade Yemen along with the Saudi Navy. So we're part and parcel of what the UN calls the single greatest catastrophe on the planet right now. So the purpose, we say, what we're trying to do is we're going after Al-Qaeda and particularly the Islamic State. Except that apparently what has been going on is that we have been allowing the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda free passage all over Yemen. We've allowed them to take their weapons. We've allowed them to loot cities, not touch them. Why? Because Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State fight against the Houthis, who are Shiites as opposed to Sunnis, which Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State are. So here we are, supposedly going after the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq and all this kind of stuff, and we're helping them in Yemen. Why? Because the Houthis are Shiites and they're supported by Iran. And we would rather support the Islamic State and these extremists against the Houthis because we're going after Iran. Now, you have to sit down with that and either take a strong drink or think, you know, that was really bad acid I dropped. This is not a good idea.
Yeah, this cannot be. We have another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I want to add to the fact that the MRAP, our mobile systems that make supposedly the United States the superior ability to fight wars, we have licensed these mobile vehicles, replacing the Jeeps, etc., to the Emirates and to Saudi Arabia, and they're not supposed to allow anybody else to touch them unless we release them. No, what we have done is that the very Al-Qaeda associates that are just now being referred to as I'm speaking to you over the radio with the delay, we have allowed not only those MRAP vehicles that we have paid billions of dollars to develop so that they're shaped like boat hulls. Whenever the explosions go off, no one is really destroyed inside. And those are in the hands of Al-Qaeda because they're friends of ours.
Okay.
We are the world's most treacherous killers. Love your program. Bye-bye.
Thanks for your raising that. Hi, do you have a comment on that?
Well, I knew they'd been giving him wraps. These were armored vehicles that were designed. They kind of have a V-shaped bottom so that if they go over a roadside bomb, when the explosion comes up, it is dissipated out on both sides so it doesn't destroy the armored vehicle. And they were specifically designed to resist roadside bombs. So now we're giving them to the people who invented roadside bombs. Hey! And people thought irony was dead. Jeez, I don't know why.
Okay, say what? Okay, there's some more here. You have some recognition for Saudi Arabia and the UAE for bankrolling.
Well, that's amazing. You know, they have these two newly elected members of Congress, Ilhan Omar from Minnesota and Rashid Tlaib from Michigan, and they were running in this last election, is the last 2018 elections, and all of this stuff started appearing in social media and leaflets and online and newspapers and things like that. But incredibly racist and Islamophobic attacks. You know, you can't elect these people. They're Muslims. They're going to come get you, and they're anti-Semites and all this kind of stuff. And so the question is, where were these things coming from? And the assumption was, well, it came from, the right. Well, no. It actually came from Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. That's who funded these attacks against these Muslim members of Congress, because they knew that these Muslim members of Congress were very critical of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, because these are absolute monarchies. So they've been very critical of them. And Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates underwrote incredibly racist and Islamophobic attacks on these two congressmen. Now, you have to sit down and go, what?
What?
Wait a minute. Would you repeat that? Yeah, so that they got an award there.
Okay, I'm going to stop you. We're going to squish in one more quick question. Quick question, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Hey, Con, I've been a real fan of your work for many years. Thanks for all
thank you
do. You bet. So you might as well get the 2019 list queued up and start taking some entries. So I have a Say What Award for 2019 you can
Okay, give it to me.
Okay. It was just a couple of days ago, Mike Pompeo was, I guess, at a press conference, and he was talking about Venezuela, and he said one reason we need to be engaged in Venezuela is we have to confront Hezbollah.
Okay.
All right, I'll get that one. Works. That's a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's a very good one. I've already got a file that's got about 8 items in it. And generally, by the end of the year, the big problem I have is, you know, deciding which ones to use. I threw away 2/3 of the stuff that I have. This is a very good one. The other one, to talk about straight shooting, is John Bolton, the National Security Advisor, he was on TV last night, and they asked him about Venezuela, and he said one of the reasons why we're interested in Venezuela is it could be a really good idea if we got American oil companies in there. That would be profitable for everybody. And I thought, well, you know, okay, let's be straightforward honest. But Hezbollah in Venezuela, yeah, they're really a problem, no question. It's because of all the camels.
Oh, yeah, the camels.
That's a warp geography award that guy ought to get.
Yes, exactly.
We are approaching the end of the program. We have another few of these to mention, but let me take a moment to mention where your work can be found. So if we don't have enough time to mention the last few, at least people know where to go to get further information. You write at the Foreign Policy and Focus, which
foreignpolicyandfocus.org, and you can find my work there. I also have a blog. It turns out I'm the only Con Hallinan on the internet. Now, that Con is double N, C-O-N-N.
Mm-hmm.
I'm it. If you put quote marks around Con Hallinan, there's no other Con Hallinan out there. And I have a blog, which my son designed for me, and it's called Dispatches from the Edge. So if you put Dispatches from the Edge, it'll take you to the blog. And what I have on the blog is I have all of my columns, everything. And it's organized by area. So if you're interested in Iran, or you're interested in Israel, you're interested in China or something like that, it's all are there. You can just go right to them. And I also have about 10 years of awards. In December, mid-December, I put that together, and then I try and get it out so it comes out just after the New Year's.
Okay, we're really out of time now.
Okay.
Okay, and there's a few more you can find online then at his blog. Again, just do a web search for Con Hallinan. That's Con with 2 N's. And thank you very much for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me, Annie and Steve.
Okay. Yes, thank you so much. We really appreciate all
Anytime.
Your work.
Okay. Anytime.
All right, we'll have to have you back for the 2019 awards.
Property, it's the